making sure, for instance, somebody can't type in Batman or Spider-Man or SpongeBob SquarePants. You can imagine SpongeBob SquarePants wearing a baseball hat. Guess what you're going to get? You're going to get 9 times out of 10, you're going to get an infringing image of SpongeBob SquarePants. So we think the AI company should be implementing safeguards to prevent that type of activity and, frankly, protect prompters from themselves, if you will.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Artificial intelligence, AI, stands at the forefront of technological evolution. So how do we regulate it without stifling innovation? Our podcast features insights from various perspectives. We've had industry leaders, to government officials, to leaders of advocacy groups. Together, they address pivotal questions that are needed to create practical regulation and legislation. We've created a space to bring a lot of diverse voices from around the world, and we'll continue to do that. Today, we have a special guest with us, the CEO of the Copyright Alliance, Keith Cooperschmidt, with us. We'll delve into the fascinating and often confusing realm of copyright in the age of AI. Welcome, Keith. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the Regulating AI podcast.
Sanjay, thank you very much for having me.
Wonderful. Keith, for our audience, could you provide an overview of your organization, Copyright Alliance's mission, its role in representing the copyright interest of creators and organizations in the United States?
Yeah, I'd love to do that because I think a lot of folks might not be familiar with the Copyright Alliance itself. And what we do here at the Copyright Alliance is we represent the copyright interests of over 15,000 different organizations across a spectrum of copyright disciplines. So when you think of copyright, you think of the usual players, right? The movie studios, record labels, book publishers, video game publishers, and the like. But we also represent a whole bunch of folks that you may not think about when you think about copyright and who are affected by AI, certainly. Things like sports leagues or, let's say, the National Association of Realtors, right, with their MLS database that's protectable by copyright, or the National Fire Protection Association that makes building codes and electrical codes, all of which are protected by copyright. And then we also represent about 2 million individual creators. These are the photographers and performers, the songwriters and software coders, the authors and the artists, and many, many others who make their living through creativity and obviously are pretty affected by AI. And ultimately, our mission is to advocate for policies that promote and preserve the value of copyright and to protect the rights of creators and copyright owners. And the way we do that is by working with policymakers, whether they're in Congress, whether they're in the administration or the executive branch, certainly the U.S. Copyright Office we work quite a bit with. We also file briefs with federal courts. And then, of course, a big part of what we do is educating the public, educating policymakers and others. We have a lot of education materials on copyright up on our website. And as you might imagine, the biggest issue facing the copyright community and all of our members, not one of them members, is not interested in AI. They're all following it very closely, very concerned about it. So I'm very, very glad to be joining you here today to talk about those very important issues.
Thank you, Keith. This is very interesting to know because most people, including me, when you think about copyright, they think about large companies who have got an army of lawyers filing copyrights. Or recently we've heard about this music industry, you know, big music moguls. But what you're saying is it's actually individuals, mom and pop, realtors, et cetera, you're protecting everybody's rights. So we all have a stake in actually what you do, Keith, right?
Oh, absolutely. We are looking out for the interest of the big guy and the little guy. And whether it's someone who's writing poetry or maybe it's an independent filmmaker or a big movie studio, we want to make sure that, frankly, all copyright interests, all copyright owners, all copyright creators of all type are protected, and that includes through AI. We don't think really the rules for AI should be any different than the copyright rules are for anyone or anything else.
Well, you mentioned, Keith, that AI is right now at the top of the mind of people. So can you tell us, how do you perceive the intersection between copyright law and artificial intelligence, particularly in the context of using copyrighted works to train AI models. There's been a lot of discussion about that. And then what are the key considerations regarding fair use in this scenario? If you can let our audience know that, Keith.
Yeah, I appreciate that question. And that really is a $64,000 question. So it's important to understand from a copyright perspective that there are two potential copyright infringements when we talk about artificial intelligence. The first potential infringement occurs during the ingestion process, where copyrighted works are copied to use for training purposes. And then the second potential infringement occurs on the output stage when a work is generated by an AI system. And the reason those two need to be considered and treated separately is because the legal analysis is going to be very different. For instance, when we talk about ingestion, a reproduction right, which is a right granted under the copyright owner to under the Copyright Act to copyright owners, is a standalone right. And then that right can be violated regardless of whether the output is infringing itself. The mere fact that you are copying a copyrighted work, that implicates a copyright owner's rights, right? Now, if you have read any of the news stories, there's been a ton of AI copyright cases filed. Actually, I think our list is 17 or 18 cases at this point. And you read some of the headlines of those cases, you might think that maybe the creative community or the copyright owners are losing those cases, but that's really not been the case. And the reason for that is because there are two separate infringements. There's one on the output side and one on the ingestion or input side. So it's important to know that no court has yet to hold that ingestion or training qualifies as fair use or that it's not an infringement. The reverse is not necessarily true. That the output side, right? There have been some cases throwing out claims that say the output is infringing. So let me talk about ingestion and fair use a little bit. The law is very clear, right? That when someone makes a copy of a work, the copier has infringed that work and has infringed the reproduction right unless either one, there's a defense, something like fair use that excuses the infringement, or number two, the user has a license. So obviously, if the user has a license, then that's totally legit, right? But the reason we talk about fair use so much is because, well, this is going to be an infringement. When AI companies ingest the work, that's going to be an infringement unless the fair use doctrine exonerates them, immunizes them from infringement. And what the fair use defense does is allow a third party like an AI company to use copyrighted work or works without authorization from the copyright owner and without compensating the owner. So you can imagine this has got the copyright community pretty concerned. And what I'll say about fair use is that it is decided on a case-by-case basis, right? It is going to be based on the facts in each particular instance. There are four factors that need to be weighed. No one factor is dispositive. And so there's nothing that can be said that is ever categorically fair use. We hear that from the AI community that this is categorically fair use, that AI teach use of copyrighted words for ingestion purposes is categorically fair. That's just not true. It's handled on a case-by-case basis. And in one instance, maybe it is. In another instance, maybe it's not. Our view is that in most instances, it's probably not going to be a fair use. And like I said, we can go into more detail if you'd like, but the overview of that.
Well, that's very, very helpful. Keith, you said there are two violations. One is towards ingestion, and one is when you do the reproduction. And then you talked about fair use, which is a very important point, which our listeners, obviously, hopefully, we'll get to know a little bit more. The general famous cases that most people are aware of is the New York Times case. There has been a Sarah Silverman case in terms of copyright violation. What classification are some of these big cases? Are they on the ingestion side or you said no case on the ingestion side has been lost so far, right?
Yeah, so those cases really cover the gamut of claims. And it's typical when you file a claim in federal court, put out all your potential claims, as long as you're not frivolous, as long as they have the basis in fact or in law for the claims to bring the claims, and then let the court tell you that, no, that's not a good claim to bring. So in really all these cases, not just the New York Times case or the Sarah Silverman case or another very important case, the music case having to do with Anthropic, there are infringements of the input on the output side. And there's also other claims brought having to do with contributory infringement, having to do with violations of what's called copyright management information, which is information about a work that is associated with things like the title of the work or the name of the creator or licensing information. So there's a lot. And if you take that information off in the process of infringing the work, that is a separate violation under the Copyright Act. And there's a bunch of different claims. Sometimes there's state law claims, publicity claims, all sorts of claims. And a lot of those other claims that kind of people expected might be thrown out, those are the ones that have been thrown out. But the ingestion claims, none of them have been thrown out in any of these cases.
No, that's great to hear. Keith, are there existing limitations or safeguards you believe are necessary to ensure that copyrighted works are protected from infringement when training AI models on copyrighted materials?
Yes. So when you talk about safeguards, ultimately, we're probably mostly talking about the output, right? What safeguards do AI companies use or should be using to prevent the likelihood of an infringing output, right? And the three type of examples that we see where safeguards would be necessary. One is what's called overfitting. Overfitting is where the output of a system closely matches the training data, right? And overfitting occurs for many reasons, one of which, for instance, is training the AI model for too long on a limited amount of ingested material, right? Another example which increases the likelihood of infringement is prompting for copyrighted material, right? If you, for instance, prompt an AI system for a name of a copyrighted character, let's say Batman or SpongeBob, SquarePants or something like that, or a particular copyrighted work. In the Anthropic case, for instance, they had put in, something like, can you write a song about a hotel located in Southern California, and the Hotel California lyrics show up, that type of thing. And then there's the idea of style prompts, where you say, give me artwork in the style of Carla Ortiz or some other famous artist or something. And now, granted, copyright doesn't protect style, but you can imagine that if you put that in, the likelihood that AI system is going to result in something that's infringing of, let's say, Carla Ortiz's work really escalates significantly. And so what we have asked and what we think that the AI companies should do is implement safeguards. It's fairly easy to do. Some AI companies have already done it or in the process of doing it, to put in safeguards to make sure the likelihood of infringement is reduced. So making sure, for instance, somebody can't type in Batman or Spider-Man or SpongeBob SquarePants. You can imagine SpongeBob SquarePants wearing a baseball hat. Guess what you're going to get? You're going to get 9 times out of 10, you're going to get an infringing image of SpongeBob SquarePants. So we think the AI companies should be implementing safeguards to prevent that type of activity and, frankly, protect prompters from themselves, if you will.
As you said, they need to be protecting this prompt violations, there is style violations, etc. Just to follow up, Keith, on that, let's just say somebody types in SpongeBob SquarePants or something like that. Where does the liability lie? Is it with the large language model company? Is it with the person who's prompting, or is it with both?
So that's a terrific question. And the reason it's a terrific question is in these litigations, you see companies like OpenAI, like Anthropic, and other defendants of AI companies saying, this is not our responsibility. The liability is on the prompter, not on us. And that just simply isn't true. There are longstanding theories of both direct liability and secondary liability that would honestly make them potentially both liable. It depends on the facts of the case. But the fact that certain AI companies are trying to exonerate themselves, saying, hey, look, we're not liable here, just simply is not consistent with existing case law. But that doesn't stop them from making the claim. So I think it's going to be up to the courts to say that. And until the courts decide that definitively, that AI is no different than any other copyright law that has happened before in the past, then I think there's a somewhat of an open question, but it really shouldn't be. It should be fairly consistent with existing case law, and these AI companies would be on the hook, just like the prompter may be on the hook for liability.
Yeah. Keith, from a creator standpoint, what safeguards, if you are a creative artist or someone like that, what safeguards or legal clarity would be really helpful to make sure their work is protected and they get proper attribution if it is going to influence some AI-generated outputs?
Yeah. That's a fantastic question, because I think individual creators especially, I mean, we talked about the distinction between large companies and individual creators, but it's individual creators who may not know what to do here, right? May not know how to protect themselves. The first thing that they can do is make it clear, either on their website, their material, their copyrighted works, their materials, whether they are willing to license their works to an AI company, right? And if they are willing to have a license to do that, or put a provision in their existing licenses that allows them or doesn't allow the licensing for ingestion purposes to AI companies. So I think that's the most important thing that they can be doing. They can be attaching copyright management information to their works, right? Put their name, their title, licensing information, things like that. And you mentioned attribution, and attribution certainly is important to creators, but what's more important is getting permission and getting compensation. And I think that's what they can do, is band together, whether it's under the Copyright Alliance flag, and you know, it's easy enough to sign up to participate as a Copyright Alliance member, just going onto our website. If you're an individual, and finding out and getting yourself educated about what you can do and what you need to do. And now there are different things like robot.txt. People will say, oh, you can put robot.txt on your work to prevent an AI company from scraping your work and using it for training purposes. But that really doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is robot.txt, throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. What it does is it also prevents search engines from scraping your material. And a lot of copyright owners don't want that. They want to appear on search engines. That's how they get their business. So I think what we do need is some type of metadata or something that tells AI companies specifically, don't copy this. But even that still is not a full-born solution, because copyright is opt-in, not opt-out. And so the AI companies really do need to go to the copyright owners and ask for their permission to use their works.
Looking to make the most out of AI advancements and innovation? Visit regulatingai.org to learn more about how best to optimize the use and integration of AI, and sign up for the Regulating AI newsletter to keep up to date with the latest in AI governance and regulation.
Keith, you said right at the beginning of the podcast that a lot of what you do is obviously advocate on the Hill. You're working with the executive branch and Congress. Congress has had 100 bills right now relating to AI. Are there any specific bills, or is there some specific language that you would like to see that would come in Congress towards protecting the copyrights of the creator, so to speak?
We don't think any legislation is necessary. We believe that an amendment to the Copyright Act that is specifically targeted to AI and would apply broadly to all copyright owners is not needed at this time. We think copyright laws is drafted in a way that is flexible to adapt to new technologies. And ultimately, that's what AI is, a new technology. And therefore, we don't think legislation is needed. Now, that doesn't mean that, for instance, legislation having to do with, let's say, transparency isn't appropriate, right? Because that's beyond just copyright, right? That's across the board for other purposes beyond just copyright purposes. And it may be that there are certain of our members or certain industries that need a specific fix. For instance, I know there's been some talk in the newspaper industry about making exemptions to the antitrust laws, which we don't take a position on, but to allow them to negotiate together with the AI companies and others, just to make it easier on everyone, quite frankly. And so we don't take a position where a particular industry might need a particular solution, because AI models apply differently, whether you're talking about music or movies or text. The models are different, right? And therefore, since the models are different, they're going to affect the industries different, the copyright community differently, and therefore the responses and solutions maybe need to be different too. But to answer your direct question, no, we're not pushing any particular legislative agenda here. I think that's something we have in common with the AI companies. I don't think they are either, but that doesn't mean that something like broader legislation having to do with transparency or other things, like I know this talk about a digital replica right, that's not copyright, so we don't take any position on that either. So
if it's not legislation, are you seeing any opportunities for some market-based solutions, such as licensing models or collective rights management entities, to address some of the challenges the creators are facing with AI?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There are already licenses in place. There are a lot of are companies, for instance, that are licensing AI companies today. And I think that's important because ultimately the solution is not lawsuits. We don't need more lawsuits, Rhea, right? The solution is frankly not legislation either. The solution is in the market-based solutions. Is the AI companies going to, for instance, a Getty Images or someone else and basically saying, okay, we're going to license your works to ingest into our AI foundational models or something of that nature. And so that, I think, is ultimately where the solutions lie. I think it would be a tremendous mistake if policymakers were to adapt in response to AI some type of solution that either interferes with the free market or interferes with the freedom of license, which is something our country really is based on. And so ultimately, the solution here, I think, is licensing, which should be fairly easy to do. And you mentioned these copyright management organizations, new type of copyright management organizations are cropping up. Existing ones are tweaking what they do to adapt to AI. So I think ultimately that is probably the best solution here.
So Kate, obviously licensing, copyright management solutions are important. Now, when you have large companies like OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, and others who are deep-pocketed, if there is a smaller entity that has to deal with this, do you think there is a potential that some of it could stifle innovation because smaller entities don't have intellectual property, army of lawyers like an Apple or others, for them to be able to do some of these things if they want to, you know, if they're using an open source model or something like that? Do you think it's going to stifle innovation in some way?
History has shown that it won't, right? And that especially if we have these collecting rights organizations, which in essence present a one-stop shop, right? You don't have to go to many different copyright owners. You can just go to this collective rights organization. And then for that matter, if you wanted to license, you know, music from a record label, they're pretty easy to find. And whether you're a small business or a large business, licensing copyrighted works, if you're using copyrighted works, is part of the cost of doing business. Just like it's more difficult for small copyright owners to protect themselves compared to large copyright owners, there's always going to be a little bit of an imbalance between the large company and the small company. I think in this particular issue with regard to licensing, I don't think it's really particularly heightened. I think it's easy enough and will be certainly even easier in the future to be able to license the copyrighted works that they need to ingest. And like I said, we're seeing a lot of companies already do that.
Keith, there has been a recent copy, the U.S. Copyright Office's guidance on AI-generated work, which has brought about some mixed reactions. Can you share your perspectives on its strengths and weaknesses?
Yeah, I think the Copyright Office back, I think it was in March of last year, so it's almost a year now or so, issued this guidance because they were getting applications for copyright registrations and people wanted to know, wait a minute, if I use AI to assist me with a copyrighted work, with my creation, what do I do? And so they really needed to put out some guidance, and they did. And they did, I think, a very good job doing it, especially with an issue as complex as this, as AI and copyrightability. But as you point out, it did get a mixed response because there were some areas that were, you know, unanswered questions and some it led to some confusion. But to the Copyright Office's defense, what they did was say, look, this is our first step. We'll probably revise this at some point once we understand more what's going on. So I think it is a very good first step for the Copyright Office, but hopefully they do go back and look at what they wrote and tweak it as necessary. And they take a more lenient, fairly lenient approach because this is a kind of a new frontier for them and for us. And we're all trying to figure out exactly how this works. I will say in terms of copyrightability, once again, the law doesn't need to be changed here. The law is pretty clear. The standards for copyrightability that existed before AI can easily be applied in the context of AI. And so we don't think that there needs to be any kind of different law. It's just a matter of making sure people understand how that law applies when you go register a work. The area that is confusing, if you will, is not the area where something is wholly created by AI. When something's wholly created by AI, it's clearly not protected by copyright. Where something is wholly created by a human, clearly it is protected, or at least potentially protected by copyright. The area that is the gray area is in between, where you have human created work that is AI assisted, or an AI work that is human assisted. Where do you draw that line? And that's a difficult question. And the Copyright Office is struggling with this. We have the creative community is struggling with this and exactly where that is. And I think the faster we get an understanding of that, I think is for the best.
Keith, we have so far been talking mainly about the U.S. copyright laws. Do you think there's opportunities for global collaboration because creators are all over the world? U.S. creators have their work being used around the world. So what is the potential for global collaboration in something like this?
Yeah, I think global collaboration or harmonization, as I'll put it, I think is essential, right? Because the days of not worrying about another country's law because you're not involved with that country, those days are over. The internet has really put an end to that as a general matter. And so I think to the extent the laws are different in every single country, that creates a level of confusion that's not good for anyone. It's not good for the creative community. It's not good for the AI technology companies. It's not good for prompters. So I think it's important that there be a level of harmonization. Now, part of the problem is here, we're both located in the U.S., right? We're talking to maybe a largely U.S. audience, and the U.S. really doesn't have standards yet or hasn't addressed this legislatively, whereas other countries have, right? Other countries are ahead of us in this regard, and we're sitting back waiting for our U.S. legislators to legislate here. And it's hard for the United States to be a leader in this area, at least in terms of what the policy should be, when the U.S. itself has no formal or limited formal policies here. The only thing I will add here is there is an international copyright convention that I think it's like close to 200 countries across the globe, all are members of. I might be wrong on the number, maybe way off there. And there is a provision in that basically says, look, if there's an exception to copyright law, it needs to abide by a three-part test, right? It must only apply in very limited circumstances, i.e. special cases. The exception must not conflict with the normal exploitation of the work, and it must not unreasonably prejudice the legitimate interests of the copyright owner. So I think as long as each country abides by that three-step test, I think there shouldn't be any issue. But we do need to look at harmonization across the globe. And to do that, the United States needs to get moving, I guess, in terms of what good AI policy is in all sorts of different areas, not just copyright.
Yeah. What role can educational initiatives and public awareness campaigns contribute to really a better understanding of copyright issues related to AI amongst various stakeholders?
Education is always an important part, especially when we talk about copyright, is an important part of any solution here. And AI is no different. So I think when we talk about education, we're talking about really educating more the individual users, whether it's the individual creator or the individual who's using the AI. I think in particular, if you're a user of an AI system and you're using it to prompt different, know for number one, that there's a lot of these AI companies are saying, look, if you produce something that's infringing, it's your butt on the line, it's not mine. And even though there's certain indemnification clauses, if you really look at the details, most of those do not apply to the individual prompter. And so I think prompters need to know that and need to be particularly careful that if they're creating something, for instance, maybe they're not typing in, give me an image of Batman. They're saying, give me an image of a superhero with a bat logo, that they need to be particularly careful because if they do something like that and they use it either a commercial or non-commercial way, they could find themselves in court and they could find themselves having to pay the bill in terms of liability as opposed to the AI company potentially. So I think that's one thing that they should understand. They should understand a little bit more about what the law is and their potential liability here. And they should also understand that their next door neighbor, who could be an artist or a photographer, is not being compensated right now by most of these AI companies. And honestly, they may be put out of business because of it. And just know that when they use a particular AI service, maybe they want to check on, is this an AI service that is actually licensing from the copyright owner or copyright creator? Or is this one that is really stealing from them without permission? I think that's something that prompters can do as well. And there's various resources out there, including at the Copyright Alliance here, where they can find that type of information out and a whole bunch of other information about copyright and about AI.
Yeah, so I think education awareness is, I think, very important, as you rightly said. Keith, finally, in your vision, what are the key principles that should guide the development of copyright policies to ensure that AI technologies can contribute to a thriving ecosystem of innovation, but also respecting the right of creators and copyright holders.
So we have 7 key principles. I'll try to go through them relatively quickly that we have up on our website too. And so the first one is, as you just mentioned, when formulating new AI laws and new AI policies, it's essential that the rights of creators and copyright owners are respected, right? And that's ultimately what anyone wants, is that we're very supportive of AI technology and AI systems as long as it's done in a respectful, responsible, and ethical way. So any new laws and policies relating to AI really should be based on a foundation that preserves the integrity and the rights of copyright owners and their licensing markets, and that the interests of AI companies should not be prioritized over the interests and rights of copyright owners and creators. Our second principle is that longstanding copyright laws and policies must not be cast aside in favor of new laws and policies that obligate creators to essentially subsidize the development of AI technology by giving away their copyrighted works for free. The third principle is that ingestion of copyrighted materials by AI systems implicates the reproduction right, as we've talked about before. Therefore, unless it's a defense, it's going to be considered to be infringement. The fourth principle, as we also talked about before, is that ingestion of copyrighted materials by AI systems is not categorically fair use, because there's no such thing as anything is categorically fair use or categorically not fair use for that matter. And that's no less true for AI works for AI than it is for anything else. The fifth principle is that AI companies should license works where they can. Anything that they're ingesting, frankly, they should be licensing and shouldn't be interfering with the free market or freedom to license. The sixth principle is that AI systems should implement safeguards to prevent the likelihood of infringing AI-generated output. And the seventh and final principle that we have is that transparency regarding infringement of copyrighted works by businesses that offer generative AI systems to the public will help ensure that rights of copyright owners are respected and that AI development is being implemented in a way that is responsible and ethical. And so those are our kind of guiding principles. And, you know, we're hoping that AI companies and policymakers and the public will kind of follow that lead, if you will. And I think if that happens, then I think we'll all be in a good place.
Well, your message is going to a lot of legislators, their staff, the think tank people. Those are very important 7 principles, foundations for creating a fair ecosystem for creators and for AI companies. Keith, this has been a fascinating conversation exploring the intricate relationship between copyright and AI. Thank you to you, to the Copyright Alliance, for sharing your insights and expertise. As we navigate this new technological frontier, fostering open dialogue and collaboration is crucial. To our listeners, we encourage you to stay informed, engage in the discussion in our community, help shape a future where creativity and innovation can thrive under a fair and just legal framework. Keith, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been a very helpful conversation.
No, thank you. I loved it. Thank you very much for inviting me to speak on the topic, and happy to participate.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.